I used to just go with whatever meat looked good or was on sale at the grocery store. But now that I've experienced the exceptional quality, flavor, and convenience that you can get from Omaha Steaks, I'm never going back. They can build a custom food plan based on your schedule, which means less food waste and stocking up on high-quality proteins to always have on hand. With Omaha Steaks in your freezer, you're always just minutes away from a quality dinner, whether it's Taco Tuesday or a weekend feast. Taste the Omaha Steaks difference and never settle for grocery proteins again. Get flavorful, high-quality proteins delivered by visiting omahasteaks.com, plus $35 off when you use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code YUM at checkout for $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I am George, the executive producer of the show. You're usually listening to Rachel right around now tell you about who our next guest is going to be, but today she is feeling very under the weather. So if you're listening to this, please send her a DM on Instagram, sending her a get well soon. Her voice sounds very, very manly right now, and she would be okay with me saying that because it's the truth. But anyways, let's get into today's guest. Our guest is Dr. Rivkin. He is a cosmetic surgeon located out of Los Angeles. He is most famous for being the pioneer behind non-surgical rhinoplasties. Dr. Rivkin also talks about how his procedures are being used to treat depression, anxiety. He even talks about procedures that he does to help people with self-harm scars. I was the one that told Rachel we need to run this episode today because I enjoyed it so much. So if you like this episode, make sure you give us a follow, leave a review, and subscribe to us on YouTube. We're up 7,000 subscribers in the last month. We appreciate all the love and support. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation between Rachel and Dr. Rivkin.
This episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Holistic Goddess. I have to share something that's really made a difference for me. It's Bison Trifecta from Holistic Goddess. I've been diving into holistic health more seriously, and Holistic Goddess has been a big part of that journey. For me, it all started with their Bison Trifecta, which is a blend of freeze-dried bison organs, heart, liver, kidney, in capsule form. Now, for some people, that may sound scary or even gross, but I'm telling you, it's amazing. The effects are tangible. You see them, you feel them, and I do not leave home without it now. When I first started taking it, I felt a noticeable boost in my energy and focus within just a few days. I was managing my hectic schedule so much better and skipping my usual midday crash. The energy and focus are just my favorite parts, but with Bison Trifecta, you get the benefits of three organs: heart, liver, and kidney. It's comprehensive, supporting hormone balance, immune health, collagen production, and more. The purity of this product is just as impressive as the benefits. No vaccines, no antibiotics, no hormones or fillers. Just clean, bioavailable nutrition that your body absorbs right away. Now, a couple months in, I cannot imagine skipping a day. As I said, I just went away on a trip to the Bahamas. I took it with me. I took it every day. People kept asking what it was, and I was happy to share the wealth. It's become an essential part of my daily routine, and I cannot recommend it enough. So use the code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off site-wide. Visit holisticgoddess.com. That's HOLISTICGODDESS.com. Use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off. Rivkin, I'm so excited to have you here and answer all sorts of questions that everyone wants to know. So thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay. So first of all, can you tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into cosmetic surgery in general?
Sure. So my background is in head and neck surgery. So otolaryngology, head and neck surgery. And part of that is facial plastic surgery. But after training, what really excited me was this new field that was just being born. This is like 2002. And all these new products just coming in, like Botox had just been introduced, right? Restylane had just been, the first fillers are out, the first, you know, toxins out. And all the kinds of things that we could do with all these new tools were really super interesting. So I pivoted my practice to non-surgical aesthetics. And it's been, you know, it's been a great ride. And one of the things that I figured out was that we were doing a lot of, I mean, before this time, anything you do with the nose had to be surgical, right? Any way to change the nose, it had to be surgery, which is a big deal, right? I mean, it's recovery and all this kind of stuff, and the risk and et cetera. I figured out that, you know, I could take a filler and get the results that I wanted to get with the nose using non-surgical means. And since then, and that was, you know, I think in this country is the first time that anybody had done that. And then, you know, after that, we went on TV and all that, and procedure took off. And now, you know, it's all over TikTok.
So let me ask a question about non-surgical versus people coming in for real plastic surgery.
Yeah.
First of all, I would assume it's less expensive. So that's the perk, right? And then it's less permanent, right? So if people feel like they don't like it, they can switch it. Like, why would someone say, okay, let me do one versus the other?
Okay. So first of all, it's less expensive. Second of all, there's less risk, right? So, you know, I mean, there's
risk because of the anesthesia. Is that what you mean?
Well, it could be because of the anesthesia, but it also could be because surgery, right? I mean, in terms of, and when I say risk, I don't mean necessarily risk to like harm to your body. Like you would be disfigured, or you would have you would be in a coma or something like that. I mean, risk in terms of cosmetic problem afterwards, right? You know what I mean? And so in terms of something going wrong, you know, aesthetically, so that's there because it's surgery, and it's hard to predict how the surgical results are going to be over time,
right?
And also there's downtime. You gotta, you know, it's, there's recovery time that you have to go for. And with rhinoplasty, for example, in particular, there's a year where it's, you know, you're still kind of in between, and you, it hasn't really, you don't have the final result.
Right.
So,
go ahead.
So that's the thing. And then in terms of injectables, it gives you options, right? You have different kinds of, these days you have different kinds of injectables. You have temporary ones that not only are temporary, but also reversible anytime, right? Mm-hmm. So you can always put some enzyme in and dissolve them. But you also have permanent fillers, and that's permanent.
Okay. So I want to get to that, but I do want to ask one thing about anesthesia. All the rage, especially in Florida, are mini facelifts and maybe eyebrow lifts that are done with no anesthesia, and they do it in your office. And people like me who are used to like kind of loving going under anesthesia and then it's over, and you don't have to have the conversation with the doctor for 4 hours while you're doing it. You don't have to be anxious and hearing everything. What are your thoughts on that kind of surgery?
Well, I mean, I think my thoughts are, it depends on your expectations.
Okay.
If you're expecting to get 10 years out of one of those kinds of lifts, you're not going to be happy. You're going to be disappointed, right? Because it's by definition less comprehensive than the full, you know, the full Monty. And so I think I'm not really that psyched about those procedures, I'll tell you. And because they are less invasive, it's true, and they are, you can do it in the office, you know, whatever. But the thing is that you're still going under the skin, you're still putting scarring under the skin, and you're still doing a procedure where the next one you do, if you decide to do another one, is going to be more complicated because there's scarring under there.
Mm.
My general advice to people is wait until you really need it, get the real thing, have it last for 10 years, and time it for when, like maybe in 10 years, you know, you'll be all right. You won't want to do another revision.
Right.
Because doing these little mini procedures, I think it puts scarring under the skin, and I think it makes the subsequent real procedure more complex. And I talked to a bunch of facelift surgeons about that, and that's the main thing that they're talking about. Because, you know, people now on social media, they talk about, oh, you know, you're going to do all these injectables and, you know, that's going to make surgery more complicated. But the real story is it's those mini procedures that actually make surgery more complicated, much more often.
Wow. Okay. That's eye-opening. Okay. So let's talk about the non-surgical rhinoplasty. We were talking this before we went on air. I think this sounds amazing because you don't have to go under. So how does it work that it, does it last as long as a real nose job?
Yeah. Well, it depends on how long you, it depends on which filler you use, right? So the way, generally the way I do it is I take a temporary filler first, make sure the person likes it. Because if, when I do a temporary, there's an insurance policy where if you, you don't like it, I can put a little bit of enzyme in and dissolve everything and you're back to, you know, back to normal.
Right.
So make sure they absolutely love their result. And then when they come back for the touch-up, which everybody needs a touch-up because it always, it settles. When they come back for the touch-up, they have a choice. They can either stay with temporary or they can switch over to the permanent filler. There's one permanent filler that's approved for use here in the U.S. I've been using it for like, I don't know, like 13, 14 years, and it's been great. I haven't had any issues with it. I know people are hesitant to use permanent filler, but, you know, I mean, it's permanent. But so is surgery, and it's a lot easier. The results I've seen with that filler, at this point, I have clear photographic results 11 years, 12 years.
Wow.
Not going anywhere. So it works. You know, I mean, it does a good job.
So I've seen this on social media where there are estheticians, whoever it is, that are not even really doctors, and they are doing the snatched face, they're fixing the nose. A lot of the bigger things you'll see that are giving the wow factor is when somebody has a big bump on the top, or it's, you know, all messed up a little bit in terms of, yeah, you know, location on your face, I guess. How are they able to fix that? How are you able to fix the bump? You have to fill in on either side and just make the nose bigger in general?
Yeah. And this is the issue, right? So, okay, of all the areas that we inject on the face, the nose is by far the most dangerous, right? And there's lots of studies about that. Because it's just, there's less, it is a direct conduit to the eye. Mm-hmm. When I say dangerous, I mean blind. You know, I mean blindness. And I mean necrosis, which means death of the skin, right? So, and when you have death of the skin, you have scarring and you have, you know, cosmetically, you know, bad result. But by far, you know, in terms of the risk, what we really are scared of is blindness. This happens extremely, extremely rarely. Mm. But in all the studies about when it happens, the most common area from which the injection is either on the nose or in the glabella here, right? When you're an esthetician, I don't know, when you're an esthetician, God knows where, and you're thinking that you're hot stuff and you're going to be injecting the nose, you better think twice, because it's great 999 times out of 1,000 when everything goes well. But that one time, things
really go bad.
Really, wow. Really. So, and it's just, it's unfortunate. But the thing is that when you have a bump, but this is the other thing, right? That's the, like, the worst case scenario, right? I mean, in terms of otherwise, though, when you're injecting the nose, you have to have a lot of training to know the most basic things, like which patients do you take and which patients do you refer? Like if somebody has a big bump, you better not inject the nose, because, you know, if you've got a big bump, you try to camouflage that bump. So you're trying to raise below the bump, because you can't make the bump smaller, right? You can't inject something to make the bump smaller. You got to.
But if you did plastic surgery, they're shaving it, right?
That's correct. Correct. Okay. Exactly. So when they're a big bump, I send them all the plastics and they shave the bump and everything. Everybody's happy. Yet when they have a big bump and you don't understand who's a good candidate and who's not, because you don't have enough training, because you're an esthetician, God knows where, then you think you're not, and you don't, you know, you misunderstand how much training is necessary for this particular procedure. You don't send that person out. You raise below. Okay, fine. Then you raise above and you keep raising because you're like, oh, you know, it's not straight. It's not straight. I want to raise it higher and higher and higher. And then suddenly, so you have it and you're good. But then you take another look at the person, they look like Avatar, right? They've got this like big honking thing that, in the top of their nose. And their nose looks like it's coming out their eyebrows.
Yeah. Like the movie The Mask.
That yeah. Frightening. I mean, I've seen that a lot on Instagram. You know? That's
terrible. Okay, wait, talk to me about what the process is then for doing this with no anesthesia and, you know, all this stuff. So is it just you're getting localized anesthesia and does it hurt? Is it, how, what are people going through?
It's just a little injection. It's no big deal. It's just like any filler injection, right?
And so you walk out looking like the new you, right?
Yeah, you really do. You really do. And that's that. There's really minimal swelling. You know, you could get a bruise possibly, but it's pretty rare.
Right. But doesn't take a year to see the final result like we were talking about.
No, you see the final result right away. And that's, I mean, look, not everybody's a candidate for sure.
Right.
You need to reduce. You got to go. You have to go to surgery. But a lot of people are good candidates. And you know, the interesting thing is that I'll have people come in. They're referred by, you know, rhinoplasty docs. So they're referred by the plastic surgeons in the community. And they'll come in and they'll be like, look, I know I'm not a good candidate for this procedure. It's a non-surgical procedure. I know that. And I'm like, okay, you're right. You're not a good candidate for this procedure. And they're like, but I'm not doing surgery. It's not worth it to me to go through surgical rhinoplasty, you know, the downtime and all that. I just don't care enough about it to do that. Anything you can do to make it a little bit better would be great. Those are my favorite patients because they're so happy. Mm. I do a little bit of an adjustment. And that's what they do great. They're very happy. They have their expectations are good. Their expectations are, you know, appropriate.
Right. I'm always curious about how you should pick the right doctor for something like this. So for me, I would really want to pick someone who is almost good at art or photography or someone who could look at a face and say, okay, you might be coming in and bringing me a picture of Angelina Jolie's nose, but that's not going to look right on you. And that can't work on you. What will make you look more beautiful, more symmetrical, younger, whatever it is that people are looking for. Is it important to find a doctor that can spot that or do they just need to be good at the actual job in general?
I think they need to be good at the actual job in general. I think people are, you know, I get it. People are a little bit intimidated walking into a physician's office, right? Especially a surgeon's office or an aesthetic doctor's office. And they don't want to be impolite and they don't want to ask too many questions, but you don't want to mess around with your face. You want to ask those questions and you want to ask the questions even before you get there when you're choosing who to go to. How many of this procedure, this specific procedure, like, you know what I mean? Not like procedures in general. I want to know how much of this particular procedure do you do on a weekly basis? And then, of course, you want to look at the befores and afters and all that kind of stuff. But just because somebody is, you know, just because somebody is a plastic surgery expert, just because they're on TV, just because they're on Instagram and they have 100 million followers, it doesn't mean they're good at the exact procedure that you want. And it doesn't mean they're the optimal person for that procedure exactly.
Right.
You know, which one. So like people talk to me about like, oh, well, I have like, you know, I have my eyelids, my lower lids. I want to get my lower lids done. Who do I go to? Do I go to this person? And I say, well, I think that nobody can be a master of all trades, right? Nobody can know everything. And so when you have a person who's doing butts in one room, boobs in another room, and then you want to have them do your eyes, I don't know. I would be careful about that. I would go to an oculoplastics person for that who does nothing but eyes.
Yeah. I think that's important that you said that. In the plastic surgeons that I've interviewed, they've said the same thing. The one guy I interviewed just does mommy makeovers, will not touch the face, will not touch below, you know, the belly button, basically. And I think that's important. And, you know, who wants to get your boobs done by the guy that really is best at noses? I mean, it's just a totally different thing, I would assume. So I like
it. It is absolutely a totally different thing. It's a totally different procedure, you know.
Right. So speaking of which, do you do non-surgical butts or does someone in your office?
Yeah.
Because I want that too.
Somebody in my office does. People are, it's so, that cracks me up because People are.
Is that a real thing, though? Like, what's the difference between non-surgical, which I feel like you've got to, you must have to inject so much in there. How does it stay? I don't get it. Versus a real surgery, plastic surgery. And then those look a little odd to me. But I'm like a skinny white chick. So I don't want that huge, even though I live near Miami, I don't want to look like that. I just want it to be like a little rounder, you know, but where no one would notice but me, really. But anyway, so I digress.
So, I mean, but so that's the difference. So that's the difference, right? It's the difference between badonk and badonkadonkadonkadonkadonk, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and so those fillers can do, I think what the fillers can do really, really well, and it's, these are, you still need a ton, but they can do like dips and they can do like symmetry and they can do like shape, a little bit of shape, right? I think when you're talking about augmentation, I don't know. I think that's it'll be expensive. I don't know how long it'll last. Surgically, what do you do? I think that's kind of problematic too. Cause then, you know, we've seen, it's hard. It's hard to put that much fat in there as well. But I think the fat transfer size-wise is a better idea. And then some people put implants in, and that can be a whole other thing.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Right. And then also, you know, that is a weird place to start working on because the standards of beauty change so quickly. So for a while, it was having a very small waist and a huge butt. And now you see people like Kim Kardashian, who made that famous, and their whole family, they're like shaving that down so they don't have that so much.
Yeah.
I think that is risky. All right. So I want to get into something that you really have gotten a lot of press for, which is this self-harm scar revision. How did you even come up with this to be a thing?
So it was purely by accident, actually. So there's an actress who I actually saw, she's on HBO, she's on Hawaii 5-0 and all that kind of stuff. And she's been kind of coming to me for years to do little things here and there and stuff, and just to kind of for camera work. And she came to me and we did our little, you know, a couple of little filler here and there and a little Botox. And then she said, "Hey, can you shut the door?" And I said, "Okay." And I sat down and she was like, "You know, I want to ask you about something that I don't talk about to anybody." I said, "Okay." And so she pulls up her sleeve. She goes like this and she shows me. And across her wrist is this indented scar it's clearly somebody, whoever put it together, really wasn't, you know, didn't care about it that much. Because it's got like little puncture holes and it's just a bad repair job. And it's indented and it's red. And she was like, this happened to me a long time. I did this to myself a long time ago. And now when I go to jobs, when I go to, you know, to film and or in my personal life as well, I have to cover it up and I have to do a lot. And it's hard to do because it's indented. And I was thinking that we fill my nasolabial folds. Is it possible to fill this? Because this really impacts my life a lot. And I said, I've never tried it before. I've never done this, but I don't see why not. And I think we should do it. So we did it. And then, it didn't put a little bit of numbing cream and it didn't hurt. It was easy to do. 5 minutes later, it's flat. Like that indentation, like it didn't exist. It's gone. I was impressed. I didn't know it was going to be that successful. She was in tears. And she was like, this changes my life. This is incredible. And then, so we're talking about it. And then she said, do you have any idea in Hollywood how common self-harm scars are? How common it is that, you know, girls and guys to some degree as well are cutting themselves and have all these scars that they're really ashamed of and remind them of when they were depressed and when they were really in low. And they can't shake it and it stays with them and it pulls them backwards when all they want to do is go forwards. And so then we formed Roll Up Your Sleeves. We tried to, and I said, you know, it's so easy for me to do this, right? And when I can, and there's different kinds of scars and I do different things for different kinds of scars, but it's so easy to do this, you know, why not? And they, people think it's expensive and some like, okay, well, you know, I don't care if that's fine. If they qualify financially, I'll do it for free.
Right.
So, you know, and I figured this profession has been pretty good to me and has been pretty good to an awful lot of people I know. And so if there's a way to give back and if there's a way that we can make people's lives so significantly better, so, so easily, how could we not?
Yeah. So explain the Roll Up Your Sleeves movement. What exactly is that?
So we should be in a society that doesn't stigmatize mental illness, right? I mean, we don't stigmatize diabetes. Like we don't think they're a bad person for having diabetes. Why would we think they're a bad person for having mental illness, right? So we should be in that kind of society. We're not there yet. So in the meantime, there's a lot of people who are very self-conscious about these scars. And this is a movement to try to, first of all, normalize that people may have some scars and it's not that big a deal. They've moved on. So, you know, you shouldn't judge them for something that happened a long time ago, but also to help people decrease their anxiety, decrease their kind of sensitivity about it and which drags them back into depression. So to decrease the signs of that. So if they're raised scars, I can inject them with steroids and make them flat. If they're discolored scars, we can do laser and make them like, you know, one color, the color of the surrounding skin. If they're indented scars, I can fill them. The problem comes if they're flat white scars. And we're still working on, you know, on how to help with that. That's a hard thing to do.
So when I first read about this, that was the first time it had ever crossed my path, right? I mean, I'm not somebody who is familiar with anything like that, but it made me stop and really think about that concept that there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, obviously, that at some point in their life were going through something. And the way that they took that out was to either try and kill themselves, or you hear all the time about people that just cut themselves in different parts of their body to inflict pain. And how prevalent that is. And it's secretive. Nobody talks about it, but so many people know about it because they've gone through it. And when you finally get yourself out of that behavior or those feelings and you are able to move on, you're still left with those scars that give you that reminder. So it's not just in your head, it's physically there. It's a tangible thing. And so I want to just like talk about that for a second, because I don't think people get it if they're not, you know, if that hasn't touched them personally, but how, how that can send you backwards and how terrible that is to constantly have a reminder on your skin, on yourself, like a tattoo.
Yeah.
Something you don't want to remember.
No question. No question. And it's absolutely correct. And that's absolutely the right. That's absolutely the right formulation of how these people are going through their lives. Mm-hmm. And if people think that they don't know someone who self-harms, I got a surprise for you. Yes, you do. Because the studies are saying among male adolescents, 7 to 14% self-harm. Among female adolescents, 15 to 30% of all of them have self-harmed or self-harm. It is very, very widespread. It's something that's much more people hide it, you know. But the thing is that at one point they were depressed, anxious, feeling bad, feeling very badly about themselves, and did this kind of this behavior of self-harm. Years later, they may be through all that and they may be recovered, but they still have those scars. And those scars, every time they look at it, drag them back instead of letting them move forward with their lives and remind them of that time and remind them of how they felt like they were less than or different from everybody else who doesn't necessarily have those scars. And they make them think like, well, you know, I'm defective. You know, I had depression. Look at all these people walking around. They don't have it. I mean, they don't know, but everybody else is going through, has their own, you know, their own shit that they deal with.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
So
that's the thing. So that's just the thing. It's just, and it's something that really, I think, impacts people. Like I put out a YouTube video about it a few years back, and I was looking through the comments on it. And like one of the first comments on it was this woman who talks about how she's got these scars and they're raised and she's really frustrated about them. And she wants to take a hot iron to them to make them flat. And it was, wow. You know, I mean, somebody it's bad.
Right. So as part of the raise your sleeve movement about teaching other plastic surgeons or dermatologists, whoever, to do this kind of thing? I mean, is it well known in a doctor's office if anyone could walk in and say, hey, can you fix this? Would some doctors be like, I don't know how to do this?
No, it's not a big deal. It's fairly easy to do. I think that the problem is that there's not really enough programs that will do this. I mean, people, you know, I mean, it's a question of affording it.
Yeah.
First of all. And it's a question of people coming into their office and actually asking about it, because most people think that there's nothing you can do.
Right.
There is. And it's not necessarily very expensive. And with a program like this, where, you know, I've recruited a bunch of physicians who do this kind of thing, and they will treat people at, you know, they won't charge them, depending if you're, you know, if you qualify financially. Mm-hmm. I think it makes sense. I think people are just kind of, it's a combination of just people not coming into physicians' offices asking about it enough. Right.
You know? It is interesting that mental health, I think, interjects plastic surgery more than people think. I mean, first of all, so many people come into the office because they're having so many issues with themselves and they want to just get an immediate fix. And then there's the opposite, where they've now gotten to their point, themselves to a point where they are very healthy. And this is the last part of just like you're talking about, cleaning up these scars, or, you know, they've been dealing with something for so long that would make them feel better, but it's not a mental issue. Can you talk about that, the difference a little bit?
So, okay. So it's interesting. That's true. So there are really good studies, like quality research, looking at the effect of Botox in the glabellar area on depression. And what they're seeing is just that, like just a little bit of Botox right there has a similar effect as an antidepressant course, right? I mean, it's very, very effective. And there's now, Allergan, who makes Botox, they're like, woohoo, that smells like money. And so there, because they're pursuing it as an indication because it works. So it's very interesting, because we minimize you know, we minimize aesthetic procedures as being kind of like foo-foo and, oh, isn't that, that's so vain and stuff like that. But it's human. Like, it's just, it's built into who we are, and it's built into our kind of reproductive, you know, desire. And so the desire for appearance, it's not going anywhere. And so some of the patients that come in, this is the thing in my field, is that you have being able to tell which patients are good candidates for the procedures that we do and which patients really have body dysmorphic disorder. It's really is critical. But I think there's a good amount of people who legitimately you do this little thing and it really increases their self-esteem and their belief in themselves. And that's fine. That's okay. And it, you know, I mean, and one other thing that I wanted to mention is, so I'm in a project now in terms with self-harm scars. That's not just about depression and anxiety. One of the other things that we need to talk about when we talk about this is also substance abuse, right? Mm. So there's a place in Santa Monica called Malone Collective, and it's an area where they do therapy, they do all different kinds of therapy. They do Reiki, they do massage, they do they do talk therapy, they do we exercise, whatever it is that you need. So it's kind of like one of those, it's an outpatient form of one of those inpatient Malibu facilities, right? Uh-huh. And so we think that self-harm scars and also aesthetic treatments should be part of that conversation. Because so you imagine, right? You're recovering from addiction. And again, you've recovered. You are now beyond, out of that world and into, to some degree, a new you, a new world, and a new future. Mm-hmm. But yet you have these scars that are pulling you backwards, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, it's important. So I think it's an important part of that, you know, that transition into the next stage of your life.
Yeah.
Is to decrease those signs when you look in the mirror, when you look at yourself, you decrease those signs of your previous, you know, of your previous life.
Right. I wanted to ask, is there one procedure that you like doing best that you think gives the best results? If someone can only afford one thing, like what is the thing they should be doing that will change their look the quickest and the most on their face?
So it's in terms of aesthetic procedures.
Yeah.
Aesthetic procedures. It's a tough question. I love the nose more than anything else, but I would think it's between the nose and the eyes. And by the eyes, I mean this here in this area, the tear troughs. So when somebody has an indentation under here and a shadow falls into it, they look tired and they look older. Fill that in 5 minutes. They look 10 years younger. That's a home run. That's pretty good.
Wow. Yeah.
It lasts for such a long time.
And obviously the nose can really change anyone's face.
It's right there. It's right in the middle of your face.
Right.
You change that, you change person.
Right. You were talking about body dysmorphia for a second. It's become very popular, some accounts, looking at how crazy these people look, whether it's huge boobs and butts, the tiniest little body to make them look like a Barbie. There's one woman out of Russia. I don't even know if you know who I mean.
Yeah, I know.
I've actually asked her to come on the show because I just want to figure it out. I don't get it.
They don't get
it. People are obsessed with her. And I've seen the before picture of her. I mean, she was this like kind of plain Jane, little innocent thing. And her cheeks are out to here. Her face is in a... Why do people do that? Do they think it looks good? I'm so confused by what's going on with them.
I think to some degree, people do this because when you're looking at yourself, you're at a disadvantage. You, by necessity, when you look at yourself, look at the trees and not the forest. You don't see the full picture. It's hard to see in the mirror. It's actually easier to see the full picture when you're looking at a photograph of yourself as opposed to when you look in the mirror. When you look in the mirror, and this is like a physiologic thing. I mean, it's like a perception thing. It's not even something that people are thinking. It's a subconscious thing.
Yeah.
When you look in the mirror, you look at specific areas, like, oh, your cheeks or your chin or your whatever it is, your nose and stuff like that. You focus in on those areas. And that's why, and that's why people, I say no to people weekly, like several times a week when they'll come in and they'll have good volume in their cheeks, borderline big. And they'll come in and they'll be like, well, you know, this area is flat. And so I don't like it to be flat. I like it to be round. Can I get some more in here? And I'm like, get out. Get out now. Absolutely not. And I can't, because it's just, they don't see the full picture. They don't see the proportions. They just see this, right? Yeah. And I think that, I mean, that woman takes it to a whole new level. That's, you know, what. And I think she did it. And then she like, I think she certainly is body dysmorphic, but I think she did it and then she got a bunch of attention for it. And now it's like, you know, it's her brand. It's her thing.
Right. It looks like that would make her, I don't know how she's going to grow old looking like that. Cause when your skin starts to sag and you get wrinkles around that, that could be a terrible look. Just like when people are covered in tattoos. I never understand. Yeah. Cause when you're like 70 or 80, I don't know that that's going to look so good.
I worked in my training, I worked in the veterans hospitals. Right. And so I see that a lot. And those hula girls, you know, back in 1946, they don't look so good now.
Right. Oh my goodness. Okay. All right. So as a takeaway, what would you say is, I actually am just curious. Do you have one specific, I know the story you gave about the actress who, when you changed her wrist and she started crying, obviously that sent you down a path of a new movement, but are there any other things you could tell us about that really, that you loved, a good story about someone whose life you felt changed? And it could be about the nose or anything else. Or is it something that you just see on a consistent basis, how you're making people happier?
I mean, So in terms of the nose, I see at this point, you know, I see patients that nobody else can, you know, that the surgeons don't want to operate on because they've had 3 rhinoplasty procedures and nobody else wants to inject because it's too dangerous. So they send them to me and, you know, and I'm their last hope, right? I'm the last stand. And so, and when I do, and you know, of course, first I make sure that their expectations are, you know, are good.
And by the way, I just want to stop you there because I think people need to hear that. Expectations are like the thing that can send you down a rabbit hole of having really bad surgery, because it's not the surgeon's fault. It's your fault of what you expect in your head. And I think that's a huge thing that people forget.
Yeah.
You're not going for perfection. You're going for like a better look or a more youthful look, but it's not perfection.
And I agree. I will put it on the surgeon a little bit. Because the surgeon has to be not so eager to do the procedure as to make sure that the expectations are correct. So to some degree, it's on the surgeon to make sure that communication is good.
Right.
And that those expectations are appropriate. So when somebody like that comes in who's had multiple procedures, nobody else is going to touch it. And I do what, and I make the nose, and I make the nose go from looking like they've had procedures and looking really unnatural to looking really pretty natural. Mm. Man, that's nice. That is something that really it changes their lives, because now they're not going out in public looking like they have, you know, a nose that's really deformed, right? And they're now they're, you know, they pass. They're it's okay. Nobody's staring at them. That's really nice. And then the other thing is that what's interesting is that people come in who grind their teeth a lot, right? And they have a lot of pain in this area, and they have it for years. And they come in and suddenly somebody somewhere tells them, hey, you know what? You may want to try a little bit of Botox in that area. It may work. And they come in and they put Botox in there and their pain suddenly goes away like that. That's nice. That's one of my favorite things. It's really, I mean, that's a serious thing. It really just affects your life a lot.
So, yeah. Great. Cool. I love that. All right. So if people want to reach out to you and find you for whatever reason they may have, tell people how they can reach you.
So, you know, Instagram is Dr. Rifkin. The website is Rifkin Aesthetics. You know, we had TikTok. I think TikTok is Rifkin Aesthetics. Yeah, it's Rifkin Aesthetics.
You're based in LA, right?
Yeah, we're based in LA. Okay, we ask, you know, just contact us however you'd like.
If people fly to LA to see you and do the procedure, can you do, you know, can you speak with them on Zoom beforehand so that they can actually just come for the procedure? And then how long do they need to stay in town? I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah, sure. People fly in all the time for this kind of stuff because I'm at this point I get referrals from all over the country with these noses. They fly in. It's a brief procedure. There's no swelling. Most of the things that I do, there's really no swelling or no aftercare. Mm-hmm. Some people fly out the same day. I prefer if they could stay overnight. That would be nice just in case, especially for noses. You know, I just want to be sure. But you don't have to stick around for that long.
Which is, by the way, much different than if you were getting plastic surgery. You have to be there for like at least a week, right?
For sure.
Yeah. And I don't think you can fly. All right, Dr. Rifkin, I really like you. I'm going to see you in LA. I wish you the best. And, I think that people should definitely look you up. And, my last question is, do you answer your DMs if people have a specific question?
Always. By the way, to answer your question, I very commonly do Zoom consultations because I don't want people flying in here if they're not a good candidate. I want to make sure. So especially if you're going to fly in, contact us. We'll do a Zoom, make absolutely sure that you're a good candidate, then have you come in.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Understood.